Welcome in. Happy Thursday. No Willard. He's back on Monday. Dibs and Grandy with you here on Willard and Dibs. Lots to get to today, Dibs. Practice number two for the Niners at training camp has already come and gone. We're going to hear from Trent Williams before the day is over. He spoke down in Santa Clara today, as we just said, Tim Kawakami at 3:15. He's been down there, including his one-on-one conversation with Kyle Shanahan on the TK show. If you missed it, don't listen right now because you're listening to Willard and Dibs, but I would suggest you listen. You can do so on the free Odyssey app. Plus, we do have nothing incredibly newsworthy about Jonathan Kuminga, but we have important faces in this whole saga that have spoken or at least tweeted. So we will get into some Jonathan Kuminga stuff as well, Dibs. But since we're just talking about it, Hulk Hogan, wrestling superstar, passed away today at age 71. Regardless of what you think of the person himself, there's no denying that Hulk Hogan, biggest star in the history of wrestling, and is a big reason why it is what it is today.
No doubt, and it just made me think about like the impact he had on wrestling, and you and I have both already said, and Lucas as well, our director of sports, where we were not big wrestling fans, and I know a lot of you are, 888-957-9570, if you want to weigh in on wrestling or Hulk Hogan, but I've always been aware of Hulk and aware of wrestling. It just was never my thing.
Same. Yeah.
But, you know, when you watch somebody like that and, you know, he started about 40-something years ago or maybe even longer, and what wrestling was then to what it is now as a multi-billion dollar industry, I couldn't help but think about just his impact and other athletes, and wrestlers are athletes. Whether or not it's a sport, I don't want to get into today. I don't think it's actually a sport. It's more of a performance. It's like the ballet. If you go to watch a ballet performance, those are athletes. Like the ballerinas and, you know, all the other people who are out there dancing, it takes an incredible amount of athleticism, but there's no scoreboard. There's no result. And so it's not really a sport, but with wrestling, what he was able to do as one of the, you know, modern superstars, and by the time he left it, what that thing was worth, that to me is really impactful.
I mean, he just brought it into the public eye to a level that it never was before.
Right.
And we're trying to think of comps, and I know I threw out Bird and Magic as one, and maybe you go even further, maybe it is Wilt, and I know James Kincaid, who works for the Warriors, but who Stani and Goo had on because he's also a professional wrestling a broadcaster, said he's the Babe Ruth of wrestling. One name that popped to mind to me, maybe not necessarily because it's so difficult because, as you said, maybe wrestling isn't a sport, so it's kind of hard to gauge like who was the best wrestler. Like Jordan is the best basketball player ever, and most people, a good chunk of people, would agree with that. You know, Willie Mays, one of the best baseball players ever. Barry Bonds, maybe it's Ohtani, right? Babe Ruth, like, you can easily, there's easy figures to say, well, they're one of the greatest of all time. I feel like it's a little more difficult with wrestling. So maybe not in the sense of the greatest of all time, but in terms of what they meant to the sport, a name that came to mind for me was Muhammad Ali as well. And what he meant to boxing, kind of similar to potentially what Hulk Hogan meant to wrestling.
Yep, great call. And it also, a lot of this for me has to do with the timing of it. And so when Ali gets into his real prime and his heyday, which a lot of that was when I was a very young person in the 70s, and you had ABC Wild World of Sports, and you had Howard Cosell, and the Howard Cosell, Muhammad Ali dynamic, not unlike what James Kincaid was mentioning about Mean Gene Okerlund. I don't even know if you know who that is.
But don't know who that is.
He was the like announcer, and he would do these interviews with the wrestlers before they would have the big wrestling match, and he was,
I can imagine.
Well, and he was in on the bit,
yeah,
obviously.
Of course.
And he was, you know, part Kevin Harlan and part like you know, town crier and like, you know, snake oil salesman.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mean Gene was hilarious and really good, and he was in on it. And so
you pit the guys against each other,
right.
and
the Mean Gene Hulk Hogan dynamic was not unlike Cosell and Ali, where, you know, Ali would like, oh, Howard, you got a toupee, and like, you know, Howard would do his thing, and he's trying to be a journalist, but he knew that he was also kind of a huckster. And so I do think that the timing of it, like Magic and Bird, when they came up in 1980, Magic is the, you know, NBA Finals MVP,
yep,
as a rookie, and those two have a rivalry at the same time where the NBA was actually going to start to be on TV live. I think the confluence of factors is partly what Hulk Hogan was able to benefit from.
Yeah, like part of why we think, or why I think at least, of Bird versus Magic as the duo that like helped the NBA reach new heights was the timing of it. Like if Steph and LeBron existed at that time and they got to finals over and over and over again, it might be a similar fact or similar influence. Although what Steiny pointed out is good. The Bird Magic thing just had like literally every angle worked out because they were college rivals. Yep. And one was black and one was white, and they went to these two mammoth franchises. So that was obviously part of it. But a big part, like if Magic and Bird came in the same circumstance, just it happened now in 2025, they would still obviously be great rivals, but the influence on the sport might not be nearly as large just because of the timing of it. The NBA has already become a titan in the sports world.
Right, and that's why I think about Steph and even LeBron, where LeBron comes out of high school as a phenom, and we actually watched his high school games.
Yeah.
I'm sure you remember that
there
as a kid.
A broadcast on ESPN, at least a couple of them.
More than a couple, like a bunch of them. It would be regular programming, and it's like, here's LeBron James playing high school ball in Akron. And
remember Jake Bilas talking to LeBron on ESPN when he was a junior.
Right,
in
a
high
junior.
School. And it's so, like, what is going on here?
I mean, the hype was bananas, and then for him to go out there and, outlive the hype and go on to do what he did at a time, which was, I guess it was pre-internet. It was right in the nascent days of early internet, and so
wasn't common for everyone.
Right, and it was dial-up, and we all had Napster, and we were trying to do our thing and stealing songs and all the rest of it. But I think that became something that propelled basketball forward. And then Steph Curry, what he's done as an undersized three-point shooting legend, not only for the league, but really for this franchise, it had me thinking a little bit about Hulk in that same way, influential-wise.
Yeah, and then the other thing, and if you want to weigh in with any thoughts, we can take your thoughts on Hulk Hogan, who passed away today at 71, throughout the show. We are going to get to a lot of Niners and Warriors stuff coming up in a little bit. But the other thing, Dibs, that you pointed out that your mind kind of trails down this route is, all right, you're not a wrestling guy. I'm not a wrestling guy. And that's mostly because of how, what was on TVs in my house as a kid growing up. And essentially, my dad, who kind of handed down all my sports fandoms, or the vast majority of them. Like, I'm a Giants fan because of my dad. I'm a Warrior fan because of my dad. I'm a Niner fan because of my dad. And my mom also grew up in the city. And while she was never as big of a sport fan as my dad, she, I remember her telling stories of listening to Lon Simmons call Willie Mays highlights, on the radio growing up as a kid. And that was a big part of my upbringing, was all of that. So because they weren't interested in wrestling or didn't have enough of an interest to have it on TV growing up, I never became a fan that way. What's interesting, though, is not my family was not a soccer fans at all. My dad, I don't know how much soccer he's ever sat down and watched. I'm a huge soccer fan. I watch a ton of soccer.
But that, from where? I wonder
came
where
to
that
me
came from.
In college. Like, I never gave it the time of day, honestly, growing up as a kid, because, I don't know, I was never really introduced to it as a sport that you sit down and watch. And I got to college, and a couple of my good buddies from school were gigantic Arsenal fans, a team in the Premier League in London, and hanging out with them. You want to come over and watch this Arsenal game at 8:30 in the morning? Yeah, let's do it. And then slowly you become a fan, and now it's maybe one of the teams that I'm most locked in on. So it's interesting how we develop our sport fandoms, because generally it's just, for me, whatever my dad was a fan of.
Yep.
And then you have an exception here or there, but wrestling was not that exception for me.
No, nor was it for me, and I don't even think that either of my brothers watched it. And, again, I don't want to date myself as being too old, but everyone knows that I'm a kid of the 70s, and back then you didn't have more than five or six channels. And so if wrestling was on, it was on once a week in a 1 hour block, and you didn't have a VCR, so you couldn't record it. So you either watched it or you didn't. And it was not appointment viewing in my household. And so we never saw it. And interesting about soccer, because I kind of came to soccer the same way as you. I worked in Marin as a PE aide, and one of my co-workers in the after-school program, a guy named Jean-Marc, a Frenchman, who loved the beautiful game. And so he got me interested in all of that and French soccer, you know, Bleu Blanc et Rouge and all the rest of it. And Eric Cantona, who was playing for Manchester United back in the day. The French striker. And so I got into European soccer through him, and it slowly kind of grew into something that I became a big fan of, but it was not, you know, through my parents. So I just was wondering about the influences that we all have where, you know, you start to figure out what you might really like as a sports fan.
I would imagine that for most people, it's what we're talking about. It's, I mean, you're so, as a kid, you're so just, you take in what's your surroundings and what's going on around you. And I feel like you get past a certain age and it's kind of difficult to like introduce something entirely new and have it not take over your life, but have it like, perhaps a new sport, a new team to get to the level of like the fandom that I have for the Warriors and the Giants and the Niners. Like that, I didn't think that was possible, but it's been that way for me with soccer. But I would imagine most people that are fans that are maybe my age or even your age of wrestling, they probably were fans of wrestling from a pretty young age and they had that from the very beginning.
Yeah, most likely. And it has me thinking about two different people, a current host that I work with and a former host that I used to work with. And my current host, Mark Willard, who will be back on Monday, he's got his young 12-year-old son who is a super duper, like beyond the pale sports junkie. Yeah. And I'm sure that comes from Mark and, you know, the household where you go home and it's like, we're going to watch sports. Yeah. It's what we're going to do. And my former partner, Joe Fortenbaugh, who's now doing ESPN, I think his kids are now 8 and 6 and he is a huge wrestling guy. Mm. And so when they have these wrestling cards, he actually will tweet out that his kids are like acting it out and there's a bloody nose here and there's like a broken coffee table there. And so he's raising his kids in that way. And so, yeah, these kids are all about wrestling and they have the little figurines and they'll do like figurine wrestling when there's not a show on. So I do think that a lot of it is from our parents, but like you're talking about with soccer, you know, you get to college and it becomes the culture of what you're doing with your friends.
Yeah. I mean, kids are just sponges in those early years. And I think it's hard to have a replacement for something like that. All right, we got time for your calls and your texts. If you want to weigh in throughout the day on Hulk Hogan, passed away today at the age of 71. But when we come back, we got to talk about the 49ers who wrapped up day two of training camp today. We'll tell you what you need to know about day number two. And then plus, you got to hear some things that some big names are saying about the 49ers. And Dibs and I will dive into that as well. It's Willard and Dibs, Dibs and Grandy with you. We're sponsored by Crystal Geyser Alpine Springwater. More coming up next on 95.7 The Game.
Now, back to
Will and Dibby
on 95.7 The Game.
Welcome back. Grandy and Dibs with you in for Willard here on Willard and Dibs. Niners training camp, day two has come and gone. Dibs, practice number two. They reported on Tuesday, practice yesterday, practice today. No pads yet, but practice again tomorrow, off Saturday, and then pads go on Sunday for the first time. Looking forward to that. There's some glowing responses coming in on Mykal Williams, Dibs, which is good news, specifically from Trent Williams. We'll get to that coming up in just a little bit, but there was something that has been thrown out today, and I think it's in response to something that was said on First Take on ESPN today that I want to get your take on, okay, Dibs? Did you hear what Lewis Riddick had to say about the 49ers?
No, I missed that.
You want to hear it?
I would love to.
Lewis Riddick, First Take on ESPN, says the Niners are rebuilding.
All signs point to Al Horford. They're certainly interested in him. I would say if they are not able to get
that's
that
the
done,
wrong cut.
Horford,
I don't know. Sorry about that. That is Anthony Slater.
Slate.
I don't know how that happened.
Crazy.
We'll get that figured out. Essentially, Dibs, Lewis Riddick said that the Niners are rebuilding. You look at what they're going to have to go up against in the trenches and what their trenches are this year. Trent Williams and then Dominic Pooney, you don't have much else there, and how they're rebuilding the defensive line. This is a team that is in the middle of a rebuild. How does that make you feel?
I don't agree, and I think that we look at words and we look at words in the wrong way. I do think that there are levels to this, as Guru would say, and you know the old expression goes about where you are. And if you look at tiers of NFL teams, if you look at the top tier of, you know, we're ready, we're there, we are a real threat. And you look at, you know, Buffalo, and Kansas City and Philadelphia, and you could look at maybe even Detroit. I don't know, whatever teams you want to look at and say, yeah, you're right there. You're on the cusp, and if things go your way, you could be a real Super Bowl threat. I would not put the Niners in that tier, but I would put them in the next tier, which is, you know, if things break your way, you've got enough to make it happen. So I don't think that they're even in the reload tier or in the rebuild tier. And if you look at the NFL right now, you could probably find 6 or 8 teams that are clearly rebuilding. Like New Orleans, I mean, who's your quarterback? It's either Shuck or two of the guys that, you know, have never really played. You are rebuilding. Carolina, we're still waiting to see about your quarterback. Tennessee, I think, is in a bit of a rebuild.
Oh, yeah.
And so, I mean, you could look at a lot of teams and say, yeah, you've got little to no chance. You are rebuilding. I don't even know if the Niners are reloading. They might be reloading, but I think last year's draft helps them feel like, combined with this year's schedule, that you're not rebuilding. For me, a rebuild is new QB, new coach, new GM. That's a rebuild. Shanahan's going nowhere. Lynch is going nowhere, and you just paid your quarterback. I'm sorry, Lewis, but you're not rebuilding.
Yeah, you're referring to Lewis Riddick on ESPN on First Take. We do have that sound now. I want to play it for you, but I agree with everything you said. Here we go. Lewis Riddick, Niners are rebuilding, huh?
I personally think they're in a rebuild, and I think they're in a rebuild because of the state of affairs in the trenches on both sides of the ball. It's being rebuilt. It just is. Look, Trent isn't going to play forever, Trent Williams. And if you take him off of that offensive line, I know there are people, if you look at that offensive line, they'll sit there and go, oh, man, who are we without Trent Williams? Quite honestly, if you kind of even back that out, who are the 49ers now, considering the fact that, look, I remember doing games against with them as recently as maybe 2-3 years ago. Look, Debo was kind of like the heart and soul of this football team in terms of the way they like to play football. The bully ball that they like to play, the attitude that they play with. I don't think San Francisco scares the NFL like that anymore. And a lot of that also had to do with the kind of people that they could roll out on the defensive side and rush you in waves on the defensive line. And they had to add a bunch of new young guys on that side of the football, and we don't know how they're going to pan out. We don't know how that unit is going to shape up. Look, we know that guys like Fred Warner and Nick Bosa are going to come out and play. We know that they're going to be there. But outside of that, look, you just don't know who this football team really is. And I think in an NFC West division that is just getting better and better, the Rams are on the up and up, the Cardinals are on the up and up, and Seattle is going to be better too. I think this could be one of those seasons where, look, San Francisco, I think you need to temper your expectations for them. I do. I know people don't like the word rebuild, but they are rebuilding some things there.
Okay, they are
rebuilding some things there.
I mean, they are rebuilding some positions. Like, you're getting new faces in there. Does that qualify as a franchise-wide rebuild? No. I have issues with a few things he said at the very end, talking about all the teams in the NFC West. Now they're all on the up and up. I don't understand the assumption that the Seahawks are magically a better football team. Like, you have Sam Darnold, who had one really good year, but are we just convinced that's who Sam Darnold is going to be? That's aside from the point. But the larger thing that Lewis is talking about is that the 49ers are rebuilding, and you need to temper your expectations as a result. When I hear someone say, Dibs, that the 49ers are rebuilding, that to me is what you laid out in terms of a rebuilding team. You have a question mark at quarterback, and you have maybe a new head coach or somebody that hasn't really been around for a while. If you think the Niners are rebuilding, you're just telling me you don't believe in Brock Purdy. And you can not believe in him, that's fine, but there are so many other examples, Dibs, of teams that move on from certain pieces, that have to get rid of more expensive pieces, maybe veteran pieces, maybe they haven't been as good of late and you have to move on because they're expensive, or maybe they're still good but they're so expensive that you have to move on from them anyway because your quarterback is due a gigantic contract. This happened to the Bills last offseason. Did we think they were rebuilding? No, because they had Josh Allen. And, like, okay, no one's going to say Brock Purdy is better than Josh Allen, but if I hear anybody say the Niners are rebuilding, my immediate response is, you just don't believe in Brock, and that's fine. I do, and as a result, I don't think the 49ers are rebuilding.
I agree with you on that front, and for me, it's about not only the head coach and the GM, but it's about the three most important positions on the field, which is the dude who gets the quarterback, the dude who protects the quarterback, and the guy who actually is the quarterback. So you've got Nick Bosa, who I do think that reports of his step down have been premature. I think that he's still been very good. Maybe he's not been somebody who has earned the top money in the league. Well, he's not that guy anymore, but the
numbers haven't been great the last 2 years.
Sure, the numbers.
I think if you dive into the responsibility that has been pinned to him,
right,
it like has been a ton considering he also is on that D-line.
And if you look at the actual numbers, you can pick whatever number you want, and numbers are numbers, and numbers are numbers, as we know, and his pressure rate, his win rate, they've all been very close to the top of the edge rusher list. And Trent Williams, yes, he is older, but when he played last year, he was really good. And so you hope that all of the off-field stuff will be kept at bay, and hopefully the injuries are minimized, and he's able to play even 14 of the 17. If he can play 14 games, I'd be happy with that. And your quarterback, if you look at any of the metrics you want, even last year where he had a step down, yes, he had a step down because he was top five in the MVP race the year before.
Hard
so
to be better than that.
Very hard to be better than that, especially when you don't have Ayuk and you don't have McCaffrey, and Trent missed a bunch. And so, yes, they have to replace a lot of guys. And I think it's more of a rebuild or a retool than it is a rebuild. And this is why I said on our show thread earlier, the text thread, that for me, the two guys who have the biggest burden this year are Robert Saleh and Gus Bradley. Gus Bradley is a former head coach, former defensive coordinator who's now on the staff, and Robert Saleh goes into the defensive meetings, and there are a majority of the guys younger than you, and you're 29. You got a room full of pups. You got a couple of OGs. You got Fred. You got Bosa. You've got Huff. Other than that, you've got first year, second year, third year defense, and so for Gus Bradley and Robert Saleh, for me, it's a big year for them to be able to take these youngsters and teach them how to play football.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the Niners, like, I think even if the defense isn't amazing, if they're not great, and say some of the youngsters take some time to become, you know, starting caliber in the NFL, I don't think the Niners will be bad if that happens. But if they are legitimately able to compete for a Super Bowl this year, it's going to come down to, one, you got to be healthy, of course. That's the obvious. But those youngsters on the defense, and Saleh and Bradley, are going to have a hell of a year, because the Niners offense has every, I think, possibility to be pretty darn good again and maybe even be the better of the two units. But that's one side of the football, and you need both to be working in unison to really win a Super Bowl. And I guess maybe the disconnect between, say, what Lewis Riddick thinks or what you and I think, and we're going to hear from Mad Dog, who was on that panel on First Take, and he refuted everything that Lewis Riddick said. Shout out Mad Dog, Niner supporter out there on the East Coast. And I know that Evan and Steiny were throwing this around earlier today as well, and Evan said they're closer to a rebuild than they are to contention. Maybe this all just depends on how we define those two words. What is a rebuild? What is a contention? Is contention just making the playoffs? Is it winning one game? Is it getting to, you know, the conference championship game, being one of the final four teams left? Like, what defines contention? I think the 49ers are squarely in the mix to contend this year. Now, they're going to need some things to go their way, but much like I view the Giants, if they were to miss the playoffs, the Niners, Dibs, oh, it's a bad season. They messed up, whether it was injury or whether it was draft picks not panning out. They have everything in front of them to make the playoffs this year, and the reason why it's not a rebuild is because you still have the core of your team around. George Kittle was an All-Pro last year. Fred Warner is an All-Pro every single year. Last year was playing on a broken ankle, and he still played every single game. Trent Williams, despite his advanced age, is still one of, if not the best, left tackle in the game of football. Nick Bosa is amazing as a pass rusher. Christian McCaffrey was an MVP finalist 2 years ago and is coming off, yes, a down year, but also a very restful year. And Brock Purdy just got paid money. If you think you're closer to a rebuild than to contending this offseason in which you pay your quarterback major money, you got another thing coming, because you just signed up for years of a rebuild if that's how you think right now.
Exactly, and that's where I look at it from the inside, not the outside. And you just mentioned the names, and of those names, you've got four who are likely heading to the Hall of Fame. I would say McCaffrey has an 80 to 85% chance of being a Hall of Famer.
Trent for sure.
Trent's at 99.9. It would take an off-field calamity of some sort for him to not make it. I would put George Kittle at about 85% to 90% Hall of Fame. If you look at his numbers and his impact, Fred Warner, I would put at about 80% as a Hall of Fame potential. Yeah. Nick Bosa is probably at about 60% right now, but he's trending toward
definitely,
you know,
on the outside looking
there.
In at that group of four. There's a big margin.
He's got 62.5 sacks, and if he gets to 100 is kind of the mark where you're going to get in. So can he get 37 more sacks over the next,
you
I don't
hope
know,
so.
6 or 7 years,
you
right? If he stays
so.
Healthy. So I do think if you look at Nick and Trent and George and Fred and Christian, five of your starting 22 are Hall of Fame-ish, and then you've got a quarterback making $53 million. So six of your 22, which is almost a third of your starting O and your starting D, they're either Hall of Famers or making massive money, and you're going to tell me that you're in a rebuild? I just don't see it that way.
No, me neither. And neither does Mad Dog, who responded to Lewis Riddick saying the Niners are in a rebuild with this on First Take on ESPN.
Well, I did this last week, Lewis and Kimberly, so I'll do it again. Okay, number one, Purdy is a good quarterback.
Oh, you
like him too.
I love Brock Purdy.
And number two, he's a great coach in Shanahan. And number three, he's a good GM. This is a winning organization. They have a winning culture. That goes a long way. Number two, you know what their over-under number is in Vegas? Vegas doesn't get it wrong. 10.5.
You know he's a degenerate gambler, right?
10.5.
Of course, I've heard that would be one of his bullet points.
10.5.
You should see what he does Saturday.
Gets you. Well, I'm going to tell you right now.
Ooh.
They play the AFC South and the NFC North. Mm-hmm. And the three other teams. Take a look at it there, Lewis.
The AFC South. They may go 0 for an NFC North.
They might be They might be 4-0 before the season starts. Seahawks, Saints, Cardinals, Jaguars. They play the Browns, the Giants, and the third team they play in that, and the Bears.
Okay, so
the other
let's,
three
see. Let's see.
They
okay.
don't play the Chiefs. They don't play Buffalo. They don't play anybody in the AFC West.
Wait, hold on for a second.
They don't play the Eagles. They don't play the Cowboys.
You guys have about 30 seconds.
Okay,
they play
on,
nobody.
They play nobody. Got that into the buzzer, Mad Dog, on First Take on ESPN. I mean, I appreciate how and why Mad Dog feels that way, Dibs. But honestly, I listen to that, and I get a little bit frustrated. Because if you're... your reason why the Niners are not in a rebuild is because the schedule is soft? That's almost like a backhanded compliment. The only reason you think the Niners are in a place to be competitive is because they don't play anybody on their schedule. The Niners still are a quality football team, just looking at their talent.
They are, but they don't play Kansas City.
I mean,
they don't play Green Bay and Buffalo back-to-back like they did last year. And you had to play those teams back-to-back, and you had five games, and the teams are coming off a bye. And you don't have the schedule this year. You don't have the same schedule this year. And I think about the teams who are actually rebuilding, and maybe the rebuild is already underway.
Yes.
And I look at Chicago, new coach, and the QB is a question mark. Jacksonville, the quarterback is maybe regressing to not being very good, and they have a new coach.
In a weird spot.
The Raiders, I'm sorry, but you don't have your future quarterback, and Pete Carroll might be in a cash grab mode. New England, Drake May, okay, he might be good.
They're hoping for the very beginning of an uptick this year. That's what they're hoping
but
for.
At the very least, they are rebuilding.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think New England's thinking this year Super Bowl or bust. New England's thinking, can we be 7-10 or better? Can we make that next step toward maybe next year being good? New Orleans, new coach, no quarterback. The Jets, Aaron Glenn, I love, and a good friend of mine's on the staff, but your quarterback dislocated his toe today, and I don't even know if he's any good.
He got carted off for a dislocated toe.
Yeah.
That was crazy.
A little awkward. Carolina, you have a second-year coach, and your quarterback, I don't think, is the answer.
Kind of similar to New England. You hope you're on the beginning of the uptick.
Tennessee, second-year coach, and I don't think that you have a quarterback.
First, or they drafted Cam Ward, that we'll find
okay.
out.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. He's played zero snaps in the NFL, so I don't know how much further I would want to go. You can look at Indy and Shane Steichen. year three coming up and they don't have a quarterback?
Well, they're looking at a failed rebuild is what they're looking at.
Exactly.
They've been in a rebuild and it's gone nowhere.
In Miami, unfortunately, with Mike McDaniel in year four, he might be the first coach out the door if they don't start well.
They might be entering a rebuild soon.
The Giants with Brian Daboll, I don't know who their quarterback, who they think their quarterback is. It's Russell Wilson right now.
They announced him as the starter.
Right, so I don't think that they're a team that's going to really scare you. So that right there is a clean 8-10. I didn't even get to Cleveland with Stefanski and whoever the hell they're going to play at quarterback. And so when you go through the league and you look at actual either rebuilds or hot messes, the Niners are not among that group of 10.
They're nowhere near not even close.
Right.
Now, are they one of the three favorites to win the Super Bowl? No. No, but things can change pretty quickly. And the other thing that really frustrates me is you heard Lewis Riddick say the Niners are rebuilding. Then you heard Mad Dog's response. And one of the first things that Mad Dog pointed out was, big fan of Brock Purdy. And then you could hear Lewis Riddick in the background say, oh, I love Brock Purdy. If you love Brock Purdy, how the hell do you think they're in a rebuild? Like, those two things, you cannot share both of those opinions. Again, I point you back to the Bills last offseason, Dibs. They traded away Stephon Diggs, kind of similar to the Niners trading Deebo Samuel. They let Gabe Davis walk, who, by the way, is still out there on the free agent market and has expressed an interest in playing for the Niners. Interestingly enough, if the Niners need another wide receiver, Gabe Davis is out there for you. They got off some high-money veterans and offensive line players and the defenders as well. No one in their right mind would call that a rebuild. It was a monetary reset, and it was setting the stage for the next few years of your era of, not dominance, but of being a competitive team. And that's what the Niners are in the middle of doing right now. This is not a rebuild by any stretch of the imagination. This is, all right, we're going to save ourselves a little bit of money. We're going to reset our pocketbook, and we're going to hope that we hit on these draft picks. And if we do, we will not skip a beat. That's the plan. It's not a rebuild. It is a reset and draft well, and you will not skip a beat.
And it's a retool of the defense. And that really is what I think Shanahan and company set out to do. I'm looking at their 4 years in which they made the playoffs in the 8 years of Shanahan. And in 2019, they were number 8 in points allowed, number 2 in yards allowed. That's a great defense. And then 2 years later, number 9 in points allowed, number 3 in yards allowed. You went 10-7. You lost to the Rams in the conference final. The next year, you were number 1 in points allowed, number 1 in yards allowed. Brock Purdy's arm fell off, and you lost the conference championship. The next year, you were number 3 in points allowed, number 8 in yards. Last year, you were number 29 in points allowed. Number 29 defensively. So for me, I look at it from the outside looking in at Shanahan, and you see the draft this year, their first 5 picks were all on the defensive side.
Yep.
And you brought back Robert Saleh, and you brought in Gus Bradley, a guy who's been a head coach and a coordinator, and you realize that if your defense is good, it allows you to run the ball, and if you run the ball, you win as a 49er team.
Yeah, I mean,
it's that simple.
That's always been the key for the Niners.
Yep.
We've mentioned this number throughout the week, the over-under win total for the Niners, Dibs, 10.5.
Yep.
Can you name, or first, can you guess the number of teams that have a higher over-under win total than the Niners?
I think the number is 5. And there are other teams that they're tied with, but I'm going to guess 5.
I've seen 4.
Oh, boy.
I've seen 4. You probably will be able to guess them if you want, or I can just tell them to you.
I know Buffalo is, I think, the top of the list.
Yep.
And
they all have 11.5 over.
Yeah, it's Buffalo and I believe Baltimore.
Correct.
And Kansas City and Philadelphia.
Correct. Yep, that's 4 for 4.
Okay.
Good job.
And there's no other that is ahead of them?
From what I looked at.
Okay.
And this is courtesy of BetMGM, is what I saw. The guys are away from the board, so you don't get your dings, but you deserve dings for going 4 for 4.
Yeah, Lucas.
There's only one other that has a 10.5 win total, and that's Detroit.
Oh.
There you go. So you have Baltimore, Buffalo, Kansas City, and Philadelphia, 11.5 wins, Niners and Lions, 10.5 wins. Now, Vegas, those numbers are not necessarily, you know, an accurate representation of how good a football team is. They're more so gauging the market and what the people think. But if you are one of the teams with the sixth best, sixth highest over-under win total, that generally means, Dibs, you're a pretty good team, and you have a shot to really compete for a championship this year.
Do you have the list in front of you of all the teams?
Not all of them.
Okay, and I don't mean to put you on the spot, but I would imagine if you looked at it, you would find teams at the bottom, such as Carolina would be at the bottom.
New Orleans. New Orleans probably at the very bottom.
Right. And these are teams where if you don't have a stable head coach, if you don't have a quarterback that you love, and you don't have either an edge rusher or a good left tackle, you're in real trouble. And the 49ers, they check a lot of those boxes. Now, it's going to be a young, inexperienced defense, and that's going to be something where Robert Saleh and Gus Bradley have to, you know, figure out who the guys are who can play defense and how you can go ahead and employ them.
Speaking of the young defense, the biggest name in that young defense of the youngsters themselves, Mykael Williams, first-round pick for the 49ers. Trent Williams spoke today. You're going to want to hear what Trent had to say about Mykael Williams. This might get you pumped up for Niner football and for that young defense. We'll get to that when we come back. Plus, Dibs, the lowest win total number for the NFL this year, the Browns, 4.5 wins.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. The Saints, Giants, Jets, Titans, all 5.5. That is the
Browns, Saints, Giants, all on the schedule.
There you go.
As are the Titans, I believe, right?
Are the Titans on the schedule?
I thought you played both of the Souths. You played the AFC South and the NFC South, but...
You're right. You do play the AFC South.
Right. So of all those teams at the bottom of the rung, you get them. Mm-hmm.
Congrats to the 49ers and that NFL schedule. Big reason why their over-under is 10.5.
Yeah, we'll see you in January, Niners.
All right. Time for a break. When we come back, Trent Williams on Mykael Williams. You're not going to want to miss that. We're brought to you by Fremont Bank. Here for you, here for good. It's Willard and Dibs. Dibs and Grandy with you on 95.7 The Game.